The Death of Growth. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with thought for today. The Death of Growth. We have around us, in this wonderful world of ours, many, many children. Many children who live in a fantasy world, who live in a world of magic and ideas that are just so glorious that we cannot even begin to understand them. They have these magical ideas in them, and they live in these magical ideas. Through the age of six, they are uninhibited. And at the age of six, they begin to become worldly. But before that, they are free. They are free to wander in their imagination. They are free to wander in their intuition, in their inner awareness. They are free to live in that special world that belongs to children. Now, it's unfortunate that that world belongs to only children. Because when that world belongs to adults, then adults begin to do spectacular things. We remember Einstein, when he was in his 20s, he wrote the theory of relativity, and he wrote all of these other things that were so profound today. And yet today we find very little scientific knowledge that reaches out beyond that. And yet in his early years, he wasn't a child at the time, of course, but in his early years, he had these great ideas. And the reason that he had these great ideas was that he did not have to prove them. He just wrote them and presented them and let the world prove it. He says, if you can prove me wrong, great, go right ahead. I don't have time to spend on proving me right or wrong. I'm just presenting this concept, this theory, this understanding that stands inside of me, and if the rest of the world wants to take it and run with it, great. If not, great. I just am having fun revealing all of the magic that is within me. Now, our friend Stephen Hawking is another person, much like Einstein. In his earlier career, he came up with fantastic ideas. And he made a great name for himself, and he was found to be a most outstanding being, even with his Lou Gehrig disease that was rather demanding of him. And as we read the story of Stephen Hawking, and we read the story of Einstein, we find they were two human beings. They were two beings with normal desires and expectations and dreams and hopes. But where Einstein was limited because his mind was always on his dream, he spent very little time in his physical world. The time he did spend in his physical world was not always in balance because he was not spending enough time there. He was not spending enough time there to realize that he is to flow. He lived his imagination mind in his physical world. Now, Stephen Hawking does much the same thing. Because of the condition of his body, he lives much of his world, in fact, the majority, 99%, you might say, on the level of thinking and on the level of his mind. And because he wasn't able to utilize certain techniques that others use in researching knowledge and studying things, he went directly to the source in his own mind. He went directly to the source in his own thinking and his own awareness. And everyone who knows him personally has a tremendous respect for him. Everyone who knew Einstein personally had a tremendous respect for him, for his magic, for his wisdom, for his genius. Oh, that each were human beings and acted as human beings from time to time. Was understandable. If a human being did what they did, it would be thought not at all. But because these master geniuses, these magnificent beings, think in a human way, they are thought to be less than perfect. We live in a very special world. We live in a world that has magic at every turn. A world that provides us with the opportunity to be something more fantastic than we could ever dream. And this world inspires us with concepts to come out. Now, just dwell for a moment on the idea of why things were created in the first place. Why is there a world? And why does this world, this universe in which we live, have certain programs, have certain principles that guide and direct its action? Why did man and woman evolve? Why did animals evolve in male and female? Well, to progenerate, to bring forth the species. Why did we have minds? Why do we have brains? Why do we have thinking apparatuses? Why do we have eyes, ears, nose? Why do we have the six senses? Why do we have these things? Why do we see and are aware on no dimension, and then one dimension, and two dimension, and three dimension, and then four dimension? And how many more dimensions are we going to become aware of as we stop, as we pull down the barriers that say how many dimensions there are? We see beyond the limits of all the things that we have presented to ourselves. But what created all these things? What sort of intuitive, magical wisdom brought these things forward? Was there a God that created these things that's separate from all, or that is one with all, as all? Is there a divine creative magic that brought these things forth? Is there a divine creative magic that is yet to be understood by us, that goes beyond the third and fourth dimension, that go beyond dimensions? When we begin to see into the dimensions of the invisible, and it is there for sure, when we begin to see beyond the dimensions of the illimitable, which go beyond any concept that we can even imagine for ourselves, when we reach out, when we listen with the childlike genius, the childlike inspiration, the childlike intuition, when we reach out with that, we find that there is so much more that's magic and wonderful, exciting. But when we settle back and we just think that what you see is what you get, what you see is who you are, when we settle back and we just look at the objective universe and we think that that is what it's all about, we have only begun. We haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. The objective universe is such an infinitesimally small aspect of the allness that we are. Every day, we, like Hawking and like Einstein, we like Mozart, we like Michelangelo, we like Picasso, we like all of the creative beings, can reach out beyond who we are. And it's not a matter of how young we are, although we're open and receptive more in our early years than we might be later. But no matter how young, the moment we decide to reach into absolute conditioning. Absolute conditioning is standing right there, ready to be reached into. It's ready to be enjoyed. It's ready to be involved in our life. We have that privilege. Now, how many times do we listen to scientific lectures that inspire us and that illumine us? How many times do we listen to stories of imagination like Alice in Wonderland? How many times do we hear the Big Bang Theory story? How many times do we listen to the life of Stephen Hawking, of Einstein, of Beethoven, of all these interesting people that come down through life, and while they're blind or while they're deaf, they write music, they write books. There's no limit to these people. It's in their brain, it's in their mind. They want to bring it out. years ago, they didn't have the facility that we have today of using tape recorders and using discs and using computers and using all the magic that we have. And we think that's magic. What we have created in the last few years is just, again, the tip of the iceberg of all the magic that will be revealed. We think that invisibility is something so strange and so unique, and yet it's quite common. We think of many other things, and we think of them as being so strange, and yet they are the reality that we are. Are you listening? Are you listening today to the beauty, to the direction, to the wonder, to the magic of who you are? Are you listening to the exciting stories that are bubbling up from within your inner being? I am. And as I listen to them, and as I tell them to my students, as I tell them to my family and friends, they poo-poo me. They say, oh, come on now, get with it. But my students, they say, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been there. I've done that. Yeah, that's where I'm going too. Yeah, that's me. I've thought those thoughts too. And you see, our true family are not really those that we are born with, but those that we have come to associate ourselves with because they are like minds. And they're thinking in the dramatic, dynamic, exciting way that we're thinking. They're living in the today with us. They're living in the magic with us. They're living in the wonder of us. Truly, do we have to die to wake up? Do we want to kill everything that is beautiful and good? Or do we want to say yes, yes, yes? If you can think it, it can be. If you can imagine it, it is. If you have it in your mind, it already exists. Many places in the universe, just open your eyes to see it. Open your eyes to see it. We do not have to die. Death is, we do not, in fact, die. Our bodies we may lay beside, but our consciousness, our being, our oneness. Now, is our consciousness one that retains memory? Well, who knows? You got the answer? Is our consciousness one that retains the desire to have human relationships on other levels of awareness? Well, if it does, I'm sure there are humans on other levels of awareness with whom we'll have relationships, and we will not be thinking of relationships that we have had on other levels of awareness in the infinite number of levels of awareness that we are capable of and that we participate in. And you say, oh, Balderdash, that's not true. Well, prove it. I'm just going to present, like our dear friend Einstein, he says, I'm just presenting these things. If you want to prove them right or wrong, that's up to you. I know in me that that is so, and I'm telling you. Now, it is true, many people have tried to find Einstein wrong. And some feel they have. And they got Einstein to back down. And yet Einstein said, okay, so maybe it's not so. But I believe it's so. He didn't change himself. He said, okay, objectively it does not appear to be so. But you'll find that it is. He wasn't worried. And all the world gained a great respect for this being because he lived what he believed. Oh, he may have been forgetful at times. He may have forgotten that he was living on one dimension while his mind was so busy percolating on another dimension. You and I do that from time to time too. We're living on one dimension and we're thinking, oh, isn't this fantastic? And then we open our mind to the present dimension, and we say, my gosh, it's morning. I've been doing this thinking all night long. Or, no, it's not morning. Nobody disturbed me. It's now a week later. and I haven't gone to the bathroom, I haven't wanted something to drink, I haven't wanted something to eat, I haven't felt any needs at all with my body, because my body was in limbo, and I was on another dimension on thought, and how great it was. That I wonder what I was thinking. Oh my goodness, I forgot. No, you don't say you forgot. You just say, I remember whatever it is that I choose to remember. And then let your mind be free. And then as you remember, you'll say, oh, it couldn't have been that. That's too far out. Oh, it couldn't have been that. That's too amazing, you know. But it really was. It was just those things that we say it couldn't have been, because that's where we are. We live in Magicville all the time. But we've become so accustomed to it, we don't see it. When you live at the ocean, after a while, you don't see the ocean. When you live in the mountains, after a while, you don't see the mountains. The ocean and the mountains are nevertheless still there. But we are in our various dimensions of thought. We're in our various dimensions of attitudes of thought, of attitudes of magic that we wonder about. And we call it magic merely because it's not conditioned by the human resources that were available to us. Oh, we are fantastic. Death holds no place for us, because it's just a matter of transition from one level of awareness to another. And we can come back again if we choose. But who wants to come back to a level of awareness that might not be as high as the level of awareness that we're going to, if high is the term, that might not be as revealed or involved or evolved as another level? We look at the various levels of creation on this level, and we go from the fish to the reptiles and to the dinosaurs and to the mammals and things, and we think to ourselves, my goodness, I wouldn't like to go back to the reptilian stage or to the fish stage. I don't want to go back and live totally in the water. But I will project myself into that attitude for the idea of doing it. So I think of myself as a fish. Now, how do I act as a fish? How do I think as a fish? I'm thinking as a fish with my present mind, just the way I am, and I'm thinking as a fish. Now, what sort of things am I going to... Well, if I'm who I am, I'll be quite investigative. As a fish, I'll begin to search the bottoms and the rises and the tops. There's a Polynesian family called the Sea Gypsies, who are utterly amazing. And they are peoples who live in boats all their life. Children are born on the boats, live in the boats, die on the boats, and they live on these boats all their life. When the Tsushima came along, they knew about it, and either they went to shore and went up in the mountains, or they rowed in the deep water like the dolphins had shown them to do, and they rowed out the storm without any danger. None of them were killed, none of them. Now, why? They're amazing people. They, from birth, teach their children to dive into the sea water to catch fish or do anything that they do. And the children are able to see underwater. They're tested by scientists to see. They can see more beautifully than we could ever imagine. Somehow or other, they just open their eyes without any type of glass over it, without any type of goggle. And they see perfect, and they can dive down, many of them, to 70 feet, which is truly amazing. Some perhaps even more. But they are amazing. They do things because it's just their nature to do it. They have no problem with clothing. They have no problem with anything. They just live on their boats, and they live in the water, and they're probably more fish than they are man. But yet, they're truly man. Many more things about the Sea Gypsies, and they're fascinating beings. Be interesting to read a study about them. I think I'll look into that. That would be very interesting. The capability of doing things in this day and age that are absolutely fantastic. And I quite imagine the Sea Gypsies are extremely healthy people, because they live in their own world of unlimitedness. They live in their own world of creative ideas and magic. They live in their own world, and as far as they want to evolve their world, they can evolve it. I imagine they're exquisite swimmers. I imagine they're exquisite floaters. And they can stay underwater longer, 3-4 times longer than we can, than any person who's been tested has been able to do. Amazing. Yes, we can do amazing things. We can live on this dimension in many awarenesses, in many dimensional in increments or improvements than we can have here. So let's try a few of these things out. Let's believe in ourselves. Let's say, yes, whatever I think, whatever I imagine, whatever comes into my thought, that's a possibility for me to do, and somehow it already exists, and I'm merely becoming aware of it and going to reveal it, if not actually revealing it now, in my life and my affairs. Yes, we live in a world of magic, not death. We live in a magic world of life, and that life is a continuing dimensional life that goes on and on in infinity, in perpetuity, in reality. Right now, join with me in that awareness. It is exciting. And know that I love you. I love you. I love you.